Silence, silence in the court, silence in the court of cyber. Cybercast is on the air to bring clarity to all topics around cybersecurity. Today on the show, it is the year 2300 or 2300. And people of tomorrow are scratching their heads asking, which came first, electricity or the internet? So that is the future chicken or the egg scenario, where digital and electricity have become inseparable. So that future is quite near, maybe even nearer than 2300. So in this episode of Cybercast, we'll explore what it means to be a digital-first utility in 2025, why grid security is more critical than ever, and how trust in technology providers shapes our energy future. So our guest today is Paul Boist from Sunly, and he will take us behind the scenes of building modern renewables in the Baltics and Poland while ensuring next-level cybersecurity across the grid. And if you like this episode, then please like, follow, comment, and tell your friends. And your friends' friends and your friends' friends' friends as well. And if you or them have interesting topics that you would like or they would like us to cover, then please write us an email to cybercast@neverhack.com. But enough about this. So, Paul. Hello, Paul.
Hello, hello.
So, Paul, who are you? Where do you come from?
I'm Paul, coming from Sunly and currently serving as head of IT, digitalization and security.
So what does that mean? Okay, let's step back. How did you end up with this job?
It's been quite a journey. I started off as a project manager. I think it was the year 2015. My brother, Lauri, is an UX UI designer and he was a freelancer. And then the client base grew and grew. So he founded a digital agency, and then I think it was the end of 2015, he invited me as a partner, come along to the journey, let's grow this company together. And then I started off as project manager and did that for 5 years, then moved up to onto ADM Interactive, which is one of the largest digital agencies, and then went there and started to lead a Drupal team, which was new for me. I didn't know anything about Drupal. Mm-hmm. And then did that for a couple of years, and I was quite convenient there. It was very, very interesting, and one day someone wrote to me in LinkedIn, this is Sunly, we are looking for this role, and this is the challenge, would you be up to join us? And I was like, I didn't really think much of it, to be honest, but I went there. Back then we were in Pirita, which is on the seaside, which is a really, really old building, and it was really suspicious. But the role itself seemed so interesting. Then I was just took the leap into unknown, so to say, because at that point of time, I didn't know anything about the energy sector. I was quite convenient in software development and everything related to that. But yeah, it was just, I just took the leap and okay, let's go. So here I am. Close to 2 years now.
Yeah. Almost 2 years now.
Yeah.
So, during your time in Sunly, and considering that Sunly is quite different from the traditional energy company, yeah, how is it different from kind of regular energy company or utility company ITs?
Well, I haven't been on the other utilities, so to say, but I personally feel that everything is different compared to the other companies, because I think it's a unique opportunity. And also why I joined Sunly is basically it had nothing like in terms of IT department or systems or cybersecurity. You can build everything from scratch, which is a really, really good opportunity. If you look at like the competitors or the bigger players on the market, they've been here for decades. They have huge departments, lots of legacy software and really complex infrastructure of systems. So we had the opportunity to basically design everything from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that this is the main thing that differentiates us. We can do more with less. We are more nimble. We can adapt more quickly. We can move faster also. But that's from the technology side, I would say. But the key thing that differentiates us from the competitors is also, I would say, very much the mindset. So it's very, very forward-thinking. And I had the privilege also that the management, and especially the CEO, is really tech-savvy.
Okay.
They really understand. And it's more like they every day they send me like articles, oh, AI this, AI that. And it's really, really interesting. And it drives us forward. Mm-hmm. You know, they believe in technology. And so you have very, very strong stakeholder buy-in, which allows you to move faster. And each department I see that is pushing these boundaries. They all started from scratch. They want to do it better than others, and like everyone is so driven, and it's a really interesting place to be in at the moment.
Mm-hmm. That's you know, sleeves up from the C-suite, right?
Oh yeah,
full on. Yes.
Yeah, and it provides you like a unique opportunity, but on the other hand, also like a big responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, it's you. You are the like the. Not the person number one, but you were in the beginning of it. You know, mm-hmm. it's kind of your face, the entire system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you're like avant-garde. You're first in line. You don't have any burden in that sense. So nimble is quite
yeah.
quite good save on your journey in Sunly. Would you or could you highlight some big milestones or some achievements or wins?
Yeah, I think there have been many, of course, but the biggest achievement personally, I would say, is that when I joined, there was like two SCADA developers doing the initial system and everything else was a clean slate. You know, they didn't have IT per se. There wasn't no IT, but already there were like 250 employees, 4 countries, but no understanding actually like... what they have or where we want to go in terms of IT and technology, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the biggest win for me, I would say, is that first of all, I think it took around a year to understand what the company has and what it needs. And on top of that, I started to build out a team that will support the milestones or the transition into actually being a digital, you know, kind of utility where we're going. And that's the first, the biggest milestone from my perspective. And of course, there have been like intermediate, bigger milestones as well, because one of the domains which we built out from scratch was cybersecurity. And I remember that we did our first security assessment, annual security assessment in 2023, in the end of 2023. And the results were quite shocking, I would say. And but we took that as a benchmark, and now a couple of months ago, we finished our second annual assessment, and to be able to see the progress, what we have done in 1 year with the minimal amount of people in-house, I would say, that was a really, really great milestone. And our goal for the next year is to be like even more, like 100 or more percent better than we are at the moment.
Mm-hmm. So cybersecurity is in essence binded to Sunly business.
Definitely.
It's not an add-on, it's, no. It's in the DNA.
Yeah, I think and one of the challenges was, well, it wasn't a challenge per se, but we lacked the visibility. So we didn't have any benchmark, like in terms of what cybersecurity situation was for us. But we already had so many systems. We have operating assets which are connected to the internet. We are already like doing, we're already an established business,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't have like a benchmark. So the first challenge was to do great visibility, and not only in terms of the benchmark, but ongoing as well. You know, cybersecurity is like isn't a one-time thing. You do an assessment, then you do something, then a year later you have an understanding where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Intermediate, you have to have like this visibility, continuous visibility, how all of your assets are performing, also like what the systems are, and so on and so on.
But let's zoom out a little bit. So let's try to define digital first utility. What does it mean in practical sense, in technology stack or in operational strategy?
Yeah, I think the term came along, I think, half a year ago or something like that, and we call it tech-driven utility. Mm. So it's like the next generation utility we call ourselves. And I think the essence of that is really simple, because we don't have a very long, like Sunly itself doesn't have a really, really long history, right? And we don't have this legacy burden. We have some, but it's really, really small percentage compared to the entire package, which allows us to basically build out the company on top of modern technologies. We are able to automize. We are able to incorporate new technologies like AI and different automations without like really redoing anything. Mm-hmm. Let's say that you have been on the market 20 years. You have built out huge, huge systems.
Huge investments.
Yeah, it's like a really, really big ship. You can't turn it immediately. Mm-hmm. But we are like this small, nimble ship where we can turn and we can change directions and we can adapt quickly. And the other thing I would say, and I think I mentioned this before, a lot of is also related to the mindset, general mindset of the company. Because then, as I mentioned, like the management and the CEO especially, but also the chairman of the supervisory board, they are really tech savvy. They understand the importance of technology in these modern times and how it impacts like everyone on the market, and especially utilities and how we operate. So, and that mindset has been incorporated to all of the employees, and especially like the head of the different departments who implement the strategies.
But how do you maintain, that nimble?
That's a good question. I would say that not overdoing it. It's really easy to start to build like this big, big ship, and you start building it, and we believe in incremental delivery. So we deliver, we have like some concepts that we want to build out. Then we build out the MVPs or box, how do we call them? And we do this incremental and we build on top of that. But you can't only develop like this one box. You have to understand how everything comes together in the end. Mm-hmm. And that is possible only because we don't have this huge legacy ecosystem, which many of our competitors perhaps have. So everything that we build, we already take into account that we would remain nimble. We wouldn't build systems that are unmanageable or need many, many people to further develop, enhance or maintain. Mm-hmm. We are building it nimble. That's the key.
Would you be comfortable in saying that you are technology agnostic?
Yes, very. Definitely. Definitely we are. And we really believe in the future where technology impacts our industry very, very hard. You know, it's a ship that you cannot turn. It's only a matter of how the companies can adapt to the current situation where the world is. And the current world is a lot technology driven.
Mm-hmm. So it is. But from customer perspective or end user perspective, how does Sunly approach differ? Or is it all about, I don't know, apps, data analytics, or is it something completely different?
It's hard to say, because Sunly has like a commercial side, which is most of the business, but we also have like retail side of the business, which is a separate operating company basically within Sunly. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I joined in 2023, the retail business just started, and it was the same as with me in IT. I did like, it took close to a year to understand what the company wants. And the retail went through the same process. First, even before starting to offer any products to the consumers, they took a lot of time to really understand what they needed. Okay. And based on that, they developed, we call them like products or services, and they tested it on small groups, took feedback, adjusted, and on top of that, I would say now it's close to 2 years later, only starting to have the products that really, really work, because it's what the consumers want. But I don't know exactly. I assume that others are doing close to the same thing, but we just didn't have the existing products. We didn't have to like change our business model. We built the entire business model exactly on top of what the consumers needed.
Okay, but what are your products? what would you bring out first?
I think the most interesting product line that we currently have, for me personally, because I'm not that into retail business, but it's related to how we're tackling BESS. And BESS, it's batteries. Yeah, we call them BESS. Yeah, batteries. Okay. So let's say that you are a company, right? And you have a solar park on top of your roof and you have a battery. And what we are doing is that we are installing a larger battery for you that you actually need. Let's say that you are only consuming 50% of the battery, and then the other 50%, which we then aggregate together through all of the other customers as well into one portfolio. Mm-hmm. And with that portfolio, we enter to the frequency reserve markets. So for you, not only that you are able to consume green electricity, we also want to provide you a like steady income revenue. So it's a win-win kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. So united we stand, divided we fall, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's peer-to-peer, peer-to-peer and crowdsourcing type of business.
Yes, and it's very much in the beginning phase, but we already see that it works. And companies, and also in the end, you can do the same at scale for private consumers. And the interest is there. And it's more, I would say the interest is higher than we can currently offer. And that's why we are building out, and it's quite interesting, we are building out like the commercial side, the grid and mm-hmm. operating assets. And we do the same on the retail business as well. And in the end, they come together.
So Sunly has secured 300 million euro of 1.1 or 1.3 gigawatt of projects, including wind, solar and hybrid parks. How has digital focus helped Sunly's expansion?
I would say a lot, and it's and I would again put emphasis on this nimble part, mm-hmm. you know, because we are quite efficient in the way that we operate, which is largely supported by the digital side. Like all of the systems which we have built and we are building are scalable. They do not really need a lot of people to maintain. So the operating side, and also we are already incorporating all of the modern technologies into our stack, you know, all of the AI automations. We really look into like how we could enhance the work of the employees, and also how we could enhance the work or how the systems operate. So minimum effort, maximum result. And I see that the investors really understand that. First of all, we have the supported mindset of technology-driven utility, and we have the systems that support that. So we are nimble, we work efficiently, and we are able to build faster because of that.
Mm-hmm. So the business itself is very much data driven. So how critical is real time data analysis?
I think it's quite important. You need to understand what is happening around you, and if we took into consider like the business that we are on, we produce electricity. It's sun. PV parks, then wind. It depends a lot on the weather, what the current weather is. Mm-hmm. So we need to understand if it's sunny today, you know, how much production it will be from that asset. Maybe it's really, really good wind at night, so we can understand, okay, we have that much potential production at night from wind. Mm-hmm. And then we manage those assets based on that, like real-time analytics.
So I've been... I use electricity prices, you know, day ahead prices,
yeah,
for weather forecasting. Because seriously,
yeah, and it's a really, really interesting thing, because we also are in the middle of developing our own like large language models, which allows us to prognose, first of all, like the potential consumption at any given times ahead, and then also how much we are producing based on the weather data that we have, and also taking into account the prices which are on the market, and putting those three lines of data together, that's how we operate our assets the in the most efficient way. But not only for us, but also for the consumers, because what we want to do is when the electricity is cheap, then we don't put it into the grid because it isn't like economically viable for us. We put it into the battery, and then when there is like peak demand, the prices go up. You as a consumer, you pay more, but we have all this cheap electricity in the battery, and then we'll put it into the grid.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we wouldn't, like the how it usually was, you have a park and you have a lot of, it's a nice sunny day, you have a lot of electricity, and everybody puts that electricity on the grid, prices go down, and for us it's basically a waste because we don't earn anything, and that's called like curtailment. And what we're doing is that we're regulating the parks down, the production, but on the same time, instead we could put that wasted energy into a battery and then put that on the grid, so we will earn, and also it will be beneficial for the consumer.
Mm-hmm. So in like mid to long term, I won't be able to use day ahead electricity prices for weather forecasting because it will be smooth sailing, smooth at the end.
Yeah, somewhere. that's where we want to go. I think currently it is not, but if we fast forward in 10 years, or I would even say less, because everybody is developing storage at the moment. There are big projects going on. I think it's 5 years or something like that. It will be definitely smoother.
But since this is a cybersecurity podcast, I need to flip the coin now.
Yeah.
So cybersecurity and grid security. So year 2300 or 2300.
Yeah.
So I built up the show on this theory that that future people don't do that distinction. So which was first, the future people won't make a distinction. Yes. Which was the first, internet or the electricity. So how does this look like? It's going to evolve, and is the show name appropriate at all?
I think it is. In that sense that they are really, really independent from each other, and together they will build the greener future. Because without electricity, you know, there isn't energy in a sense, you know, because if you think about like smart grids, then based on the data that you have, you control the entire grid in a more efficient way, but you need internet for that too. But if you don't have electricity,
then you don't have
internet as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In the future, I think people will look at them as a whole. They both enable each other to operate, and together they allow the energy grid to operate in the most efficient way.
But coming back to the security part, the internet is a crazy, crazy place with all sorts of criminal activity going on. And so, so what kinds of cyber threats worry you the most? Is it like ransomware, state-sponsored attacks, or perhaps hardware backdoors?
All of them is the honest reply. And it's this continuous paranoia in my head. Because I know what the situation is at the moment, and we have made a lot of progress, but I also understand that the threat surface for our company is really, really large. Let's take the geopolitical situation that we have at the moment. You know, the energy grid is, I would say, the target number one that you want to take out. Of course, telecommunications as well, and that puts like this red dot on back of your head.
Mm-hmm.
Ransomware definitely would be the most destructive, I would say, because if any of the attackers would gain access to over our operating assets, they will be able to do a lot of damage for us. But also, if you have big enough assets and you're also participating in this manual frequency market, then it will also potentially cause damage to the grid itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the more assets you have, okay, we have like assets in the parks, but you have many people, you have many, many systems. You need to understand in what situation those systems are. So patching and that is really, really important. What we do is we have like these scans, which scan through all of the networks, all of the devices, all of the park devices each month. Then we have a report, and we every month we take out all of the critical and high issues. So in that we keep ourselves maintained, so to say.
But how about data? Do you also think about data poisoning, or because you know you are very much data driven?
Yeah.
It's like when kind of a bad guy comes and poisons your data, you make a wrong decision.
That will definitely have a significant amount of impact, but that can be mitigated in a way as well. For example, we have a platform in place where we connect all of the data sources that we have, and all of the data sources have a set of rules. You know, you have a value, we know the value, standard value, deviation should be this. If it goes outside of that, it's an anomaly, and that will trigger an alert, or the value is empty, that will also trigger an alert. So all of the data sources that we have on top of that set of rules, which continuously analyze if it's normal or if it's not normal. So that will mitigate, I would say, half of those cases. But if you do like small fluctuations, definitely over time you can cause damage with that.
Mm-hmm. So it's like years ago there was this Stuxnet thing.
Mm.
So that was really, really painful and wake up call for many. And that turned out to be a state sponsored attack.
And in terms of these cyber threats, what I forgot to mention, what I would even say is the most complicated is the human side of the cyber security. Systems are easy. You create visibility about the systems you have. You put processes in place how to maintain those systems, and you can mitigate them quite easily. But to impact user behavior,
mm-hmm.
that is difficult. Mm-hmm. And most often the most damage comes to small mistakes which us humans sometimes make, and that allows the bad guys to come into your systems and cause damage. So continuously educate your employees and make them understand how this is potentially, like how this can potentially damage you and the company.
So it's
a continuous effort always.
Yes. So yes, of course. So it's a somewhat a crossroad of safety and security.
Yes, and the interesting part is that you can automate a lot of that as well. You don't have to have like always this. How you can optimize is how we are doing it. One of the easiest ways how a human can make an error is through like phishing attempts. And in this AI led times, the phishing attempts are really, really smart. And how we are doing it, basically, we are putting ourselves into the position, okay, we are the bad guys and we do phishing campaigns ourselves. But we, like persons, are not doing it, but the system is doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it uses the know-how which is available on the market, how phishing attempts, what are the most common phishing attempts and so on, and it sends out automatically. Mm-hmm. And it learns from our employees as well. Like what works the most, put more effort in that. If it doesn't work, pull that less, analyze data, this group is more potentially vulnerable, put more effort in there. And it's a continuously learning platform which automates all of the phishing campaign, so to say. We don't do that manually anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's also part of the awareness awareness raising automatically.
And also supports the narrative that we have to be a tech-driven utility and the company, I would say. You look into certain processes which you're currently doing manually, how to automate it.
Now I want to ask a question of an uneasy question from you.
Mm.
A lot of trust is being put into tech vendors.
Yeah.
So where do you see the biggest risks and how do you mitigate them?
Well, in our sector, if you're looking it through the assets perspective, the best technology comes from China at the moment. If you look like the PV panels and a lot of the storage or batteries as well. And on the other hand, you really don't want to send the data to China or be able to have like these digital links because they exchange protocols, you know, through internet. And those protocols also allow you to control your assets. And if you don't mitigate the risks, okay, we are using Chinese technology and everybody else is using it because it is the best available. But if you're also using the vendor software to operate them, then you put yourself in a quite dangerous place because you are sending out data. When we see that as well, you know, you can see it sends out data to external IP, which is located in China, and it sends the protocols there as well, which allows them to control your assets if they want to. So what we are doing is basically, yes, we're using Chinese technology, but we are not, we're using the Chinese hardware, but we are not using their technology. We override that with our own platform and technology, which we control and operate. But in the bigger picture, I would say that you really have to understand who the vendors are, what they're using. And how we did that is that we have a strong vendor policy in place. If you want to start using products or services from a certain vendor, you have to go through a process which asks you a set of questions from legal perspective as well and cyber perspective as well. And once you go through that process, you more or less have mitigated it.
Okay. So that kind of enforces that you are technology agnostic, so you don't... you don't do a lock-in. You will never a vendor lock-in.
No. And you need to understand like what is the key parts of your business, and really think that if it's reasonable to use a vendor technology there or have your own. Like I said, we are using our own SCADA system, not the vendor SCADA system, and there are like more places like that which you can mitigate.
Mm-hmm. So. Would you say that cybersecurity is now central to energy operations?
Definitely.
And for you?
For me, and I would say the industry entirely as well, because you can see how digitalized the industry is and the grid as well. And digital means that it's running on platforms which are connected to internet. And it's a paradoxical thing. Like one of the key things that I want to do is to digitalize, automate, to make it more efficient. But while doing that, I also increase the threat vector. So you have to do it in a really, really smart way and make sure that everything that you are building or putting into place has to be secure. And my role personally as well is to make sure that the company and especially the management understands that. Because everyone wants to be more nimble, as we say, and be more tech-driven, be more digital, utilize all of the technology that is available, incorporate AI in everything as they do at the moment. But on the other hand, with that comes like increased threat from cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. Because everyone, the bad guys are doing it itself. They are also using AI to be smarter. Yes. So it's a race, continuous race, I would say.
Yes. So it is. Are you also near shore Baltic or Estonian utility companies that share threat information?
I don't think that we are sharing threat information between ourselves, but what you can do and what we are also doing is to monitor all of the dark web and dark markets, so to say, through where we're using Recorded Future, right? So we are setting in place certain metrics, keywords, brands that we're using, also vendors, right? And if anything leaks or there's a threat, potential threat, we have that information. And I can bring you an example. We used a certain vendor and that vendor has like this login page. That if we were using a vendor system, which we are not, but if we were, you have this login page, you log in and you can control the assets. And that brand is in our system, so to say, which we are monitoring in the dark web. And we got an alert that this brand login session cookie was stolen, so to say, and it's available. The login session cookie is available in the dark web. Mm-hmm. And you can purchase it, and it included like a username and password.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and that would have given access to...
No, well, if our logins were there,
yeah,
we don't know because we didn't look into it, because we didn't use it. But theoretically, it could also include your login credentials and you can gain access there. But we know that this kind of stuff is happening with the vendors that we are using. And that is why to really, really understand, and it's important to understand which technology you have to have your own. So you wouldn't put yourself in these kind of situations.
Understood. So technological advances in renewables getting closer to 2300, are we? So Sunly is developing hybrid parks, solar, wind and storage together. So how do these setups solve power issues?
Well, it mitigates the risks coming from the weather, you know, because you don't always have really good sunny day. You don't have a windy day. So for us, you can see it from three perspectives, I would say. From us as a company, it is that if you have a really, really nice weather, but and everyone produces to the grid, so there's a curtailment. So there's too much energy coming to the grid. Then we, instead of like turning down our assets, not producing, not getting any revenue, we put that energy energy into batteries. And then from the battery, when the prices are right, or where there's like peak demand, we put that to the grid.
There is also something that you do, which is quite interesting. It's called AI-driven drone inspections.
Yes, that's well, we have drones and we are starting to incorporate them. So the parks can be really large, like they can be like several kilometers long. And instead of like inspecting, walking through or riding with your bicycle, which also some are doing, we are using drones. But right now, like a person operates them, you know, based on if you have some kind of alert or it's a regular inspection, so to say, they can go and check that with the drone. But you can automate that, so to say, AI. You have a continuous flow of data from your assets that is coming into the centralized system, right? And if there is some kind of alert that there's a fault or anomaly, then the current flow is that it comes to our systems, then asset managers pass it along to technicians and they go on site. But the first round of inspections, you don't actually have to go onto the site as a person. Let's say that you have a drone on site. It's like a helicopter landing page. So to say, you have an anomaly, then the alert is sent to the drone, and then the drone, and it tells you the exact location of the fault. Let's say you have a panel has a string 4 has some kind of issue.
Yes.
Drone flies there, takes a closer look, and then the AI can also like inspect that data against the benchmarks, because you can already interpret like video format, let's say, and if there is the need for the human to go there, then they will go there. But the first half can be covered through drones.
Mm-hmm. So it's like the parks are really big. And you would have a fleet of drones covering some kind of sectors there, and
basically it can be like a regular thing. Like let's say that every day in the morning 7 a.m. a drone goes through the entire assets, checks for anomalies or some kind of issues. Maybe there's snow on the panels or there's something else, or the grass is too high. And then there can be like this on-demand inspections that are coming through the systems. and then they join me code there.
Mm-hmm. So cool.
Yeah, that I would think is what is like tech-driven utility. You really look into like these kind of opportunities, how technology can help you as a company and help you as a person as well, because the parks are, let's say we have a Poland, the distance between parks can be hundreds of kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of driving there via car and then back, you can, you know, have a drone doing it.
You mean a drone like a quadro drone, or you mean like a more like plane drone?
No, I think it's difficult if you have plane drones. It has to be on-site, I would say. Mm-hmm. On-site cool. Kind of drone, because, yeah, I don't think the police or whoever monitors the skies would like that.
Yeah.
A lot of drones flying around between different parks.
Not too much, yes.
No.
Also, something really interesting that you are doing is the pumped hydro solutions.
Yeah.
So it's the next generation storage. You would pump water up when it's when energy prices are, you know, low.
Yeah. We as a Sunly, we're like, there's in Estonia, there's a company called Zero Terrain Energiasalv, which aims to have, I think, the first large zero terrain pump hydrage storage. And we are investors in there, because if you have like these smaller batteries, they cover, I don't know, 4, maximum 6 hours battery consumption or the electricity consumption. But if you have a pump hydro, there's like 2 levels of water reservoirs. So if there's like excess energy, like what we call waste, then the pumps push the water to the upper reservoir. And if there's high demand, then you just use gravity to push water through turbines, which then generate electricity to the lower turbine. And if you have a big enough battery, how we call it, it can cover close to like 12 hours of energy consumption. Mm-hmm. I think I calculated or saw somewhere that in 2010, Estonian peak electricity consumption, if you take that and then take Energiasalv, which that can offer, it can offer like in Estonia 1/3 of the entire energy consumption for 12 hours.
Cool. Yes, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So yes, I would like to take this together somehow. The kind of core problem and the core thing about electricity is and core problem in renewables is that it's not predictable in that sense. What we're trying to do is we're trying to predict and somehow smooth out the production and the need of the consumers. So we need to keep that balance. That's very much data driven, and there's also, you know, I just, you know, got hooked up for a second. I got reminded by a nice story about when we talked about this miles long sun panel system fields, right?
Yeah.
Then it reminded me that for, you know, the people who, who measure the land, I don't know, I don't know the English word for that, but, you know, the people who measure the land.
Yeah.
It would be much easier for them if the earth would be flat. Because it's quite difficult to put kind of...
But there's a group of people who believe that there is.
Yeah, yeah. And
they should be the ones doing the measurement, I think.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's like models, loads of models, yeah, how to draw maps, and everyone is not right and kind of a bit bizarre. So coming back to the field example,
yeah,
is that when you have long fields of whatevers or roads, long roads, then to compensate that the world is round, they do small hooks, small corrections,
yeah,
in the fields and in for the roads actually.
Yeah, and to change the perspective, a couple of days ago, I read an article that there's a technology that can change the angles of fixed pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So you do a picture with a static picture, and there's a technology which now can, through AI, again, can change the angles of that actual picture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you change the perspective. So we have a round world. We can change the perspective to flat.
Yeah, that's good. Yes. That's good.
Technology.
Yes, yes, yes. And thank you. If you like this episode, then share, follow, comment, and tell your friends about our funny flat earth talk here. And if you want to say something specific or ask something specific, then feel free to write to cybercast@neverhack.com. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you for having me.
My kind of really, really last question for you is that, so which was first, electricity or the internet? What do you think? Just one word.
Technology.
Technology first. So thank you. And next episode in 2 weeks.